Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
Welcome to Hagman. This is the Hagman Report for today. It is Monday, April 5th, 2021. It is day number 76 of America held hostage by the Communist Chinese Party, Beijing, Biden and company. Of course, in an election that was stolen. We must never forget that. We cannot move past November 3rd. And about that, Mike Lindell's got some great stuff coming out. As a matter of fact, he has, as part of the new scientific proof or new documentary coming out or the new expose coming out about the extensive nature of the fraud and how it was done and where and why and how and all of that, there was published by way of Worldview Weekend, Brandon House, good friend of the program, his interview with a PhD about the specific key, the algorithms, plural, that were used throughout the United States. Very interesting. All right. What I want to do initially, come right out here, as part of the title of today's program is, we're approaching the final revolution. Could be we're in the midst of the final revolution, but final revolution is the key here. Whether it's a revolution by the globalist elites or whether it's the revolution by the people, that remains to be seen. It's going to be up to us to be that civil disobedience line of opposition against the people who want to subjugate us to a permanent state of slavery. One situation I would like to point out that began making its rounds, and I would like to make sure I wish everyone I hope everyone had a great Resurrection Sunday. For those who celebrated, that's right. The tomb is empty. He is risen. And that's the only way for us to be saved. But one thing that I saw over this weekend is this significant video from Calgary. How many people out there saw this from Calgary up there in Canada? Okay, this rabbi, pastor, addressing head on the police in his church. Pastor orders police to get out of his church. Get out, you Nazis. Did you see this? Rather than talk about it, well, this was reported yesterday at 9:30. Initially, I saw this yesterday, and this was reported, by Nick Adams at redstate.com. But in other outlets had picked it up. But this is extremely, in my view anyway, extremely important. This is what we need to do. This is the approach that we all need to take. It's my view. Anything less than what you're about to see is an unnecessary compromise that will lead us into essentially loving our servitude, into this voluntary acceptance of servitude, which is we can't have. So let's take a look at what happened. Again, this is in Calgary, in Canada. A pastor during his services was met by a health inspector and five police officers. Go ahead and roll the video.
Get out of this property immediately. Get out.
Get out of this property immediately. Out. I don't want to hear anything. Out of this property immediately. I don't want to hear a word. Out. Out. Out of this property immediately until you come back with a warrant. Out. 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 Out of this property. Immediately out. Immediately go out and don't come back. Don't, I don't want to talk to you. Not a word. Out of this property. Out of this property. Immediately out. I don't care what you have to say. Out. Out. Out of this property, you Nazis. Out. Out. Gestapo is not allowed here. Immediately, Gestapo is not allowed. Out. Do you understand English? Get out of this property. Go. So go. Go. And don't come back without a warrant. Out, Nazi. Out. Out. You understand? Nazis are not welcome here. Out. And don't come back without a warrant. Do not come back without a warrant. You understand that? You're not welcome here. Nazis are not welcome here. Gestapo is not welcome here. Do not come back, you Nazi psychopaths. Unbelievable, sick, evil people. Intimidating people in a church during the Passover. You Gestapo, Nazi, communist, fascists. Don't you dare coming back here. Can you imagine those psychopaths? Passover, the holiest Christian festival in a year. And they're coming to intimidate Christians during the holiest festival? Unbelievable. What is wrong with those sick psychopaths? It's beyond me.
All right, now that pastor, he's the pastor of, now I'm going to get this right, the Cave of Adullam Church in Calgary, Canada. His name is Arthur Pulaski. Okay, hopefully I'm pronouncing that properly. Now, he knows of that of which he speaks. He's been at the center of attention before. Why? For daring to feed the homeless and, for other lockdown related issues and infractions, so to speak. But he reportedly grew up in Soviet controlled Poland and witnessed firsthand that kind of oppression. Now there's a part two to this, and I'm very much, are we okay, by the way? I'm noticing some glitches. All right. And folks, we're still working out some glitches, and we're going to be getting some different equipment in here, I believe. So we appreciate if our video goes out, we're just going to continue with the audio, have some video overlays as well. But nonetheless, there's a part two to this. And I think the part two is equally important to the part one. The part one is what you and I need to do. I believe as Christians, we need to stand up to this kind of Stasi or communist type of an attack against our Christian faith and against us as Christians. This is, and folks, this is not about a virus. This is not about the coronavirus, the COVID-1984, the Chinese Communist Party virus. This has nothing to do with that. This is all about controlling you and I. And again, we can see that we are in the midst of the final revolution. And this is the final takedown as well, or attempted takedown of a population that worships one God, the God of the Bible. This is what this is all about. This is a battle between good and evil. It's as much a spiritual battle as it is a physical battle. Okay, now the other part of this as well, before part two, I just want to mention that if you look at the stats with respect to mosques, I've got to tell you, the mosques are still open, especially in Canada, and functioning as normal, unmolested by the police. All right. Let's go immediately to part two of this. I don't want to keep John Moore waiting too long. I want him to see this. And this is going to form, I think, or at least initiate some part of our discussion today, because there's so much to talk about. Go ahead on this one, on this part two.
It's beyond me. Wow. Wow. How dare they? How dare they? Sick people. Sick people. Unbelievable. We're living in a takeover, a total takeover of the government with their thugs, goons, the brown shirts, the Gestapo wannabe dictators coming to the church with armed with guns and tasers and handcuffs to intimidate during Passover celebration? Well, I guess that's what it is. They want to enslave us all like the Egyptians did. They want to be pharaohs of today. That's what they're doing. Unbelievable. People, if you're not wake up, stand up. Wow, I don't know what is going to happen tomorrow. If Canadians will not rise up, look what is happening in Germany. Germany is taken over by fascism again. The wannabe Hitlers are already ruling. You cannot even leave from one city to another. It's a total lockdown. If you will not be vaccinated like a dog or a cat, you will not be able to buy or sell. You will not be able to go to school or work. Is that the future you want? Is that what you want for your children and your grandchildren? Seriously, is that the future of Canada? That's the future of Canada? Wow. Unbelievable. Friends, you gotta join the fight. We have rallies. We are meeting every week, and we need numbers. We need to stand up against them, and we need to file lawsuits against their craziness right now, while we still have that window of opportunity. Because if we don't do it now, I don't think we're going to have tomorrow. Our rights are being taken away from us so quickly, it's unbelievable.
All right. He speaks the truth. Now, there was a couple of days ago, there was a Good Friday service in the United Kingdom. I don't know how many people saw this. Not Eric the Tech, I don't know if you can grab it. It's on YouTube. But police broke up a service, a Good Friday service, at a Polish church in London after police officers there in London said that it was against the regulations. Now, this was reported in Guardian News. And what happened, which you, and if not, no worries, but okay, you got it? Okay. Now you compare what happened and the reaction by this Canadian pastor to what you're about to see, including, but not limited to, the people in the pews at this particular church. Now remember, the first part was the UK, or was Canada. This part is the United Kingdom. You can see the progression, in my view anyway, the progression of mental enslavement, at the very least psychological enslavement. But it's even more than that. Go ahead and roll this clip and watch the reaction of the people, the priest, the whole nine yards. Go ahead.
So please explain us.
Ladies and gentlemen, this gathering is unfortunately unlawful under the coronavirus regulations we have currently. You are not allowed to meet inside with this many people under law. At this moment in time, you need to go home. Failure to comply with this direction to leave and go to your home address ultimately could lead you to be fined £200, or if you fail to give your details, to you being arrested. I suggest, ladies and gentlemen, though it is Good Friday, and I appreciate you would like to worship, that this gathering is unlawful, so please may you leave.
All right.
I appreciate your right to worship, but...
When there's a but in there... I'm not going to make a joke about that, but when there's a but in there, you know what comes after that is all BS. Okay, so here's that situation. You saw that situation. And did you notice people begin to file out? All right. No one stood up and said, wait a minute. This is a house of God. This is a sanctuary. This is a place of worship. We are here and you shouldn't be here. Now that's in, again, the UK. And I often refer to people, men in the UK as cuckolds. All right. This, again, that's a reference to a Shakespearean term. Soy boys here in the United States. Same thing. Now, one more. Just hang with me because you're going to see where this is headed here. A good friend of mine, a good friend of the program is Roddy Howard Brown. Now, you know what? Look, you might think, well, I know him. He was that laughing, preacher or whatever back in the day. Okay. So fine. Look, that's fine. If that's how you know him and remember him. But he's written a number of books. He is who he is. But one thing he is not is a pushover. All right? Whatever he once was and is today, you know, people change. But he's not a pushover. Now, a year ago, this is from a year ago. This is not from this weekend. But this is from a year ago, and you might remember this, all right? Watch this news item. This is from Fox 13 out of Tampa Bay from March of last year. And this is about Rodney Howard Brown. And he caught a lot of flack from the Christian community for doing what he did in this video, by opening his church in this video. Okay, you're going to see a mugshot and so on. But let's play this clip. Go ahead and run this clip.
Sunday, shots of a packed church went viral.
You may be seated. Amen.
By Monday, Pastor Rodney Howard Brown of the River at Tampa Bay Church had a warrant out for his arrest.
His reckless disregard for human life put hundreds of people in his congregation at risk and thousands of residents who may interact with them this week in danger.
Hillsborough Sheriff Chad Cronister said Brown encouraged members to show up in person amid the coronavirus pandemic, even providing bus transportation. Brown turned himself in on charges of unlawful assembly and violating public health emergency rules of isolation and quarantine.
This church has a concern not only for the physical well-being of its participants in the community, but also the spiritual well-being.
Liberty Council, now representing the pastor, maintains the church had hand sanitizer available, 6-foot separations on the floor for family groups, and staff wearing gloves.
They bought $100,000 worth of hospital-grade equipment that they have established throughout the church that kills microbes, including those in the family of the coronavirus.
Attorney Matthew Staber calls the arrest discriminatory and unconstitutional.
You cannot look at the situation and say that it's being evenly enforced across the board.
Texas-based First Liberty Institute, which defends religious freedom, sees gathering restrictions in a different light.
This is a hard adjustment for people to make, but I think we have to make that adjustment. The state has to have a compelling justification, a compelling reason to say we're going to ask people of a certain size of gathering to stop meeting for a period of time temporarily.
They're encouraging religious leaders to continue serving just online in small groups or drive-through type events.
Let's figure out the best way we can go and work together to preserve religious liberty on the one side, but also maintain the public health on the other side of things. Those two can work together.
Haley Hines, Fox 13 News.
All right, Haley, thanks. So where exactly does the Constitution stand on when we have restrictions for gatherings, especially when you have a religious one? Well, check this out today. We spoke with William LaMarshall. He is actually a professor of law at the University of North Carolina. He's an expert in constitutional law. And he told Fox 13 today that if there's a dangerous epidemic that actually is putting communities at risk, there are, in fact, legitimate government reasons to restrict what otherwise would be constitutionally permissible. What does that mean? Well, what's not constitutional, let's start there. If the danger does subside, but the restrictions remain in place. Or, for example, if the restrictions were enforced on religious groups only. Listen.
If the order said that only religious groups couldn't congregate, that would be a problem. But as long as it's a neutral limitation, then it goes to political gatherings, it goes to religious gatherings, social gatherings, concerts, as you mentioned, It will generally be upheld because of the state's interest in emergency health situations like this.
And Marshall referenced the case, in fact, this one, Jacobson versus Massachusetts, way back in 1905, an example of the government overriding individual liberties during a health crisis. A pastor objected to the state requiring people to get smallpox vaccines. Well, the Supreme Court, they sided with Massachusetts, ruling that the general public has a right to protect itself against epidemics.
All right, you can stop it right there. So when you go through this, all right, now, that 1905 Supreme Court ruling was not constitutional then, it's not constitutional in 2020, and it's most assuredly not constitutional in 2021. Now, Canada, obviously, the UK, not, they don't have our constitution, but America does. But the reason I tossed in the Rodney Howard Brown clip is because of what is taking place here in the country as well. Even today, there are places that are being fined, that are being forced to shut their doors and harassed, mercilessly harassed. And most of them are, in fact, all of them, with a couple of different exceptions. You've got a couple of Jewish temples, but the majority are Christian churches that are being subjected to this harassment. And in my research, the majority of those end up acquiescing to the whims of the health inspectors and the government and saying, okay, fine. Unlike what we saw in Canada, unlike what we saw with Rodney Howard Brown back in March of last year. But had we had more Rodney Howard Browns in March of 2020, we wouldn't be facing the situations we are today. Lastly, as I wrap this up and go to John Moore from LibertyMan.com, just quickly here. Alex Jones had a special broadcast on Saturday. I don't know how many people watch this. I'm not going to play anything from Alex Jones today, but I recommend people watching the show. And he spoke of the SPARS pandemic, S-P-A-R-S, SPARS pandemic. All right. Now, you're familiar with most people are familiar with the event 201 that preceded, of course, you know, the COVID-1984 Chinese Communist Party virus. Most people have heard of or are familiar with the Crimson Contagion. Okay, those are kind of one-shot deals. But on Saturday, Alex Jones had pulled out documents, the SPARS documents, the St. Paul Acute Respiratory documents, which predate all of these. These documents date back to 2017. But it lays out the plan, the larger plan. And what's the larger plan here? Again, as we approach we are in the midst of the final revolution, you know, there's us, we the people, and then there's the people who are, the small g gods over us, all right? You know, attempting to push their will upon the American people and more importantly, the world. The SPARS operation, the documents there, and you can go back to Operation Amalgam and Virgo, and again, look at the other operations as well and projects, and you can see that this has really been planned out for a long time. Agenda 2030, Agenda 21, you get the idea, right? So we have their playbook. The push right now, as we see it right now, and this was really the heart of Alex Jones's show on Saturday, his emergency broadcast, is the fact that you're looking at the vaccine, which is not a vaccine, it's experimental genetic therapy, it's an experimental genetic therapy injection, as part of a depopulation program. And you know this, we've talked about this. But when it's laid out in advance, and as Alex Jones had shown on Saturday, and the link will be in the program, just go to Infowars.com and you'll find it. Simple as that. You know, you can find it just to see SPARS 2025 to 2028. Those documents that lay out how the globalists will launch a second, more severe pandemic to consolidate final power into their world government project with an even deadlier vaccine, okay? And I'm using that word vaccine, but I mean experimental genetic therapy or genetic therapy, period, to stop the crisis that they created, that they themselves created. So we know all of this. And it's being – when you watch certain programs, for example, I watched The War Room with Steve Bannon, War Room Pandemic. You have people on there. And coming up on Thursday is going to be Dr. Sherry Tenpenny on this platform. But here's the situation. When you start to connect the dots and you see that Fauci, the head of the NIHAID, okay, here in the United States, was actually behind the gain of function, having moved the gain of function studies out of the United States to China because of its danger. And then, of course, the gain of function studies, that resulted in this virus was released, whether intentional or not. We can have that debate anytime. And then, of course, the rollout of an experimental genetic therapy known as a vaccine or references a vaccine, at the ready, you've got to start questioning the people who are the very people who you are being told to listen to. You have to start questioning the motives, means, opportunities, and paymasters of people like Fauci and people like Birx and others. So in sum and substance, what we are looking at here is a depopulation. Well, let me go back. Is a softening of the population and for ultimate depopulation, for ultimate subjugation and takeover of not just the United States, although that's the key component here. That's the stumbling block. That's the speed bump in the globalist fast-paced final revolution or final play for world dominance and one world currency. It's all about money, too. It has a lot to do with our currency, money, wealth, and the control of that. It all ties together. All right? Just understand, because the COVID vaccine passports, which, you know, are being sold on eBay. Look how quickly the FBI and how aggressively the FBI is doubling down, saying you can't, if you're caught forging these vaccine passports, oh, we're coming after you. Yet Hunter Biden laptop, not so much. Voter fraud, no. No. Election fraud, no. They don't care. But by goodness, man, you create those things, we're coming after you. So the bottom line, globalist smoking gun documents, SPARS pandemic predates Event 201, predates the Crimson Contagion, involves the very same people you know about, Bill Gates, Fauci, and so on, the very same institutes such as Johns Hopkins University, the National Institute of Health, World Health Organization, and the various labs, including but not limited to the Wuhan lab in communist China, which is why we refer to this as the Communist Chinese Party virus. So with all of that, so the pushback against this, which is the final revolution versus what they are attempting to do to us, that's where we're at. That's the bigger kind of a walk around the perimeter of what we're seeing. In essence, a summary of where we're at today. Now, with that, we have a lot to discuss. Go to, folks, thelibertyman.com. That's thelibertyman.com. Of course, as always, it'll be in the program description box. Joining me now is John Moore. John Moore does a ton of radio, does a ton of media. And of course, he's doing a marathon today as he sits and listens to me drone on about these things. But the rest of the time is wherever he wants to go. But, folks, listen to John Moore. Check out thelibertyman.com. There, right up front and center, is a link to his radio program. You click on that. You can drill down for the archives, and you can schedule it throughout the week. But he does radio 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. John, how are you? And glad to see you.
I'm wonderful, Doug. It's good to be here. How are you doing, sir?
Good, good. And thank you for your patience with me, but I wanted to get that out of the way. I thought it was important to show people what we need to do and how we need to fight back against this oppression. And I think people need to understand, in my closing here, I think people need to understand that the globalists want to eradicate Christianity. Of all the world religions or belief systems, Christianity is like front and center, and we are targets, and we're walking with targets on our back. But the pushback is excellent. We need more of that. That's kind of really what I want to show as well. So,
okay. Well, I saw the Polish pastor video earlier today. One of my listeners sent that to me. Very powerful stuff. The scene from the church in England did not surprise me. The British have become very compliant individuals, it seems like, as individuals and as a country as a whole, they have become very compliant, unfortunately. You know, we saved England twice, in 1917 and again in 1941. It doesn't seem like they've taken their own history to heart. At one time, the British were known to be warriors and free men who were all armed, and that's changed dramatically. We're to the point where if you defend yourself from an invading criminal, you will be charged with a crime yourself. It's a very sad situation that the British have put themselves in. Doug, the Alex Jones show is supposed to be posted on my website soon. It's incredibly important that people watch what he says, look at the documentation. The documentation is rock solid and very important for the work we're doing, you and I, Doug, in the alternative media, to inform people about what's going on.
Absolutely.
I had conversations over the weekend with a retired registered nurse. She worked for the Veterans Administration, and she told me the following. She says, John, for decades, us nurses pretended to give each other the flu vaccine. We were required to get it for employment, so we pretended to give it to each other to take care of that requirement. And I said, well, what about the COVID shot? She says, well, my friend's still working. They say the same thing, that they'll pretend to give it to each other so that they can keep their job. They're not going to take the shot themselves while they do give it to other people. And of course that's going on nationwide, Doug. This is not an isolated incident. Healthcare professionals know the risks of an experimental vaccine. It's not really not a vaccine, as you said, this experimental shot. Something that, when they were addressing the, church gatherings, the foundational thing that was not addressed is the following fact, and it is a fact. There is no pandemic. There's no, once you understand and realize and document the fact that there is no pandemic, there's no further need for any discussion about censorship of churches, limiting gatherings, or any of this other silliness, because there is no pandemic, Doug. In 2009, they changed the protocols of what is called a pandemic and what is not. Before 2009, you had to have two things. One was a disease in many countries. Two, a lot of people dying from it. Well, they eliminated number two in 2009. Now it doesn't matter if anybody dies at all. It's called a pandemic. And that's what's going on, Doug. We have a make-believe pandemic. The people dying were all within a year of death from something anyway, unfortunately. And of all the people that get it, 0.23% die. Doug, that is not a pandemic. The things they're using to justify this as a foundation is a pandemic. There is no pandemic. If there was a legitimate medical emergency, then as one gentleman said earlier on your show here, everything would be shut down. Walmart, the mosques, all the public gatherings that have not been affected by the alleged pandemic would be shut down also. But that, Doug, that didn't happen, did it? It didn't happen at all.
No, not at all.
No, not at all.
It was very selective.
It's been selective shutdown.
Yes.
And you're right. Christianity is the enemy of the New World Order. There's never been anything like middle-class American Christians going about the world, spending their own money on their own time, bringing hope to these godforsaken parts of the world, such as South America, Central America, Africa, Asia, the Middle East. There's never been anything like that in the history of the planet, of middle-class American Christians taking the time, spending their own money to do the missionary work that's been done now for quite a few decades, especially the last 100 years or so.
Yeah.
And the New World Order is definitely afraid of Christianity, because Christianity encourages liberty, and Christianity encourages self-reliance. Christianity encourages people to live and take care of themselves without any need for government to help them live their life. That poses a direct threat to socialism, to communism, to fascism, the fact that Christianity flies in the face of all these isms.
That's right. I agree with that.
It does. Yep. And it has to be stopped. Unless they can stop Christianity and Christian missionaries, they're going to fail. And they know that. That's why Christianity has such a big target on its back, is because of the success of Christian missionaries going around the world. And I've met some of these men and women. God bless them. The pastor of my church was a Christian missionary to Kazakhstan, and one of those, you know, the old Soviet republics. And he's told me at length the things that he went through raising a family in a communist country. It was difficult, but for him, it was the right thing to do. His family was part of that. And he's just one of thousands of American Christians around the world doing the right thing for the right reasons. The pastor of another church I used to go to, he was a Christian missionary in the Middle East for many years. I don't know, better part of 20 years. Could speak Arabic with the proper accent and so forth. Helped many Muslims convert to become Christians, by the way, which he's still doing that work. It's very dangerous work, as you might imagine.
Oh, yeah.
Because you have a bona fide target in the middle of your forehead if you're converting Muslims to become Christians. That's very dangerous work, but he does it anyway. So, Doug, the COVID matter is not going to go away. We've seen the president and the director of the CDC, this female doctor, encouraging people a week ago today, I believe, that it's not over. We all need to be wearing masks. We all need to continue the social distancing and destroying our culture, destroying our country, destroying our economy. They didn't say that, of course, but that's exactly what's taking place.
Mm. Yeah.
I want to segue into something else here, Doug, and that's the trial of former police officer Chauvin.
Okay, let's do that. All right, because
Minneapolis.
Yeah. All right.
If I was the defense attorney and it was my turn, the prosecutor's finished, I would stand up in front of the jury and say, ladies and gentlemen, what you've just seen and heard put on by the prosecutor, in the absence of what I'm about to show you, I would convict this guy myself. If the only thing you knew was what you just been told. There's a however coming. However, ladies and gentlemen, you weren't told everything. You weren't shown the video of George Floyd handcuffed inside the cruiser saying, I can't breathe, I can't breathe. You weren't shown that. You weren't shown that for a reason. The reason being, one of the well-known things that happens to a person that's overdosing and about to die from fentanyl overdose is that person will say, I can't breathe, I can't breathe. You weren't told that George Floyd was removed from that cruiser at his request. Most likely, I don't know, but most likely the officers thought, well, this guy must be claustrophobic. So we'll do the right thing. We'll take him out of the cruiser because he's claustrophobic, and we'll do what we were trained to do, what the police manual tells us to do. You weren't shown that, ladies and gentlemen. You weren't shown the police manual that says when you take a prisoner out of a cruiser, you're supposed to put him on the ground, face down, and put your knee on his neck. You weren't shown that, were you, ladies and gentlemen? No, you weren't. That was for a reason. The prosecutor wants to keep that knowledge from you. They want to get a conviction, despite Officer Chauvin having done nothing wrong. He did everything right. The only person that did something wrong was George Floyd. Now, I'm about to show you, ladies and gentlemen, as part of the official evidence here, the toxicology report. Now, this is science. They did a blood draw of Mr. Floyd after he deceased. The blood draw showed that he had enough fentanyl to kill three healthy adult males in his blood. The blood draw showed that he had heroin on top of the fentanyl. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this is what killed George Floyd. George Floyd killed himself because of he voluntarily ingested enough fentanyl to kill three healthy adult males, and I say that for a reason, because your size and your weight has a lot to do with how much drugs it takes to kill you. In addition, he ingested heroin. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I'm here to tell you that George Floyd killed himself, that Officer Chauvin did nothing wrong, that Officer Chauvin did everything right. Now, Doug, based on what I just said, which I think is going to be pretty close to some of what the defense attorney is going to say, I believe the defense attorney can convince one of the 12 jurors, probably a man, because the prosecution's case is all emotion, by the way. And men tend to be logical. Women tend to be emotional. Of course, there can be obviously exceptions to that. The defense attorney has to convince one jury member that Officer Chauvin did everything right and did nothing wrong. That's the level of convincing that the defense attorney has to do. The prosecutor has to convince all 12 that Officer Chauvin was actually responsible for the death of George Floyd. That's my opinion. That's what I believe will happen, Doug. This trial will probably go on to hot weather. Of course, in my neighborhood here, it's already 80 degrees today, and it's not even noon. But these riots will start no matter if Officer Chauvin is exonerated or if he's found guilty. The riots begin the night of the trial ending. That's my opinion, Doug. It doesn't matter what the jury decides. The right thing to do, of course, is to find Officer Chauvin innocent and exonerate him because he did nothing wrong. The emotion-driven prosecution needs to fail. They need to be beaten. If Officer Chauvin is found guilty, you're going to see a lot of officers resign from Minneapolis Police Department, leave the state of Minnesota, because they know that if they are involved in an incident where they do everything right and follow police procedures, they also could end up being charged with murder. Not a good place to be, Doug. And I think that you're going to see probably already have seen many resignations from Minneapolis Police Department and other departments in the state of Minnesota because I don't know if this prosecutor is a local guy, if they brought him in from the attorney general's office. Do you know, Doug, yourself?
Ask me that again, attorney general's office.
The prosecutor in the Chauvin case, is he a local DA or did they bring in a guy from the attorney general's office in Minnesota?
That's a great question. I believe there is a, from what I'm looking at here, I'm not sure of the composition of the prosecution, but I believe that they're working in tandem, if I'm not mistaken. And let me pull up, because I was taking some notes on this, and I've got actually the entire autopsy report. I mean not just the tox screen, but the actual autopsy report, which is really interesting. Let me just look here, because that's a very good point about the composition of the prosecution. And folks, the reason this is important, I mean, either way, whatever happens, whether they come back with a guilty verdict or a not guilty verdict, it's not going to make a difference, that much of a difference, I think, in totality with respect to the response. I think the response already been choreographed, or at least planned out, I should say. And I think that the influence of those people, behind the scenes are, I mean, regardless of what happens, it's going to play out very, very poorly. Let me look here. Again, I'm not 100% sure. I'm going through pages upon pages of notes. And that's one thing I didn't really highlight that. Hang on just one second here. Well, while I'm looking for that, do you have did you end up getting the autopsy? Okay. It's got a number on it, and it just popped in? All right. I had to go through the NSA first, folks, apparently, you know, 6-10 feet away, and it's got to go through, you know, NSA servers. All right. I want you to take a look at this while I'm looking for the, composition of the prosecution. This is the medical examiner's autopsy report dated May 25th of 20. And this is done by a pathologist in Hennepin County. Okay, so when you look at the final diagnoses, 46-year-old male became unresponsive while being restrained by law enforcement officers. Now, that is not an indictment of anyone. He received EMS care in the field and subsequently in the Hennepin Healthcare Emergency Department, but could not be resuscitated. Now, it does show some injuries, of course, to his lips and such, because there was well, you saw the video. Look at number two, the natural diseases. Okay. Severe arterial sclerotic heart disease. Hypertensive heart disease. All right. Incidental left pelvic tumor, but okay, that's fine. And then, of course, non-threatening injuries identified. And you can see what speaks to me the most on this, John, when you look at this, is not the presence of, but the absence of life-threatening injuries. You see what I mean?
Right.
There's nothing there about, you know, a crushed windpipe, for example. As we've seen with, you put a knee on the neck, for the purpose of killing someone, you will create trauma.
Well, it says right there, no injuries to the anterior muscles of the neck or laryngeal structures.
Exactly. Now,
there's the evidence right there.
There it is. Exactly. Now, if you number six on page two, Roman numeral six is the toxicology report. The lethal dose, for the average person, the lethal dose of fentanyl is 3 nanograms per milliliter. 3. Look at that. It's 11. Norfentanyl is a cast off of fentanyl, as well as number 3. And then, of course, methamphetamine, 19 nanograms milliliter. Right there, 1 through 4 essentially would be enough to put down, oh, you, me, Eric the Tech, and probably 3 or 4, 5, 6 listeners and viewers.
Yeah, I don't know what the lethal dosage of methamphetamine is, but and this 4-ANPP, what is that?
That is a byproduct of it's a metabolism consequence of metabolism. If that makes any sense. When fentanyl in other drugs are metabolized by the system. That's what it reads out as. And I've seen that in fentanyl. I've seen that in heroin. I've seen that in other drugs as well. And it also, so at times, metabolizes into, shows positive for morphine. So, just saying. But, so, you're exactly right, John. I mean, this proves you correct. I don't know.
Well, he had nearly four times the amount to kill a normal, healthy adult male.
That's right.
At 11.
Yes. I've spoken to a coroner here in my county, the coroner in my county. I've spoken to a medical examiner in my county, two different things. And they've all agreed, of course, depending on the individual tolerance and such, they pretty much agreed. 3 nanograms per milliliter is fatal. You can't come back from 3 milligrams, generally speaking. And then, again, that's a broad brush statement, but nonetheless, it's accepted. He had 11.
Right.
So that's almost four times the lethal amount.
Really close.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, was there not evidence of him attempting to hide or otherwise ingest or insert the drugs to avoid
there was some mention of that, and I don't know what the answer is.
Okay. Yeah. I'm not sure either. We looked at the autopsy report, and again, absence of evidence is not necessarily evidence of absence, but there you have it. So, but you're right, though. I mean, when it comes down to it, what's the cause of death?
Doug, I've won murder cases with these same kind of facts, where I had a client charged with beating his petite girlfriend to death at high noon on a busy street in a small city, many, many witnesses. And I got a toxicology report, and I'm talking to the lead, the trial attorney, and I said, there's our defense right here. This girl, she had enough cocaine in her blood 12 hours later. They do the blood draw 12 hours later, and the cocaine is, I think, every 90 minutes after death, there's half as much as there was 90 minutes before. 12 hours later, she still had enough cocaine to kill 2 or 3 people in her bloodstream. when I talked to the toxicologist, that was his first question. I told him the amount of cocaine in the girl's blood. His first question, John, how long after death did they draw the blood? I said, it's 12 hours, Doc. And then he told me what I just told everybody here. She still had enough cocaine in her blood to kill 2 or 3 normal people after 12 hours. We weren't required to tell the prosecutor what our defense was. The prosecutor thought we were going to use the wild woman defense, that the boyfriend was attempting to restrain his out-of-control girlfriend and just got carried away and accidentally killed her. That's what he thought our defense was. He finally figured out what the real defense was after the jury was picked. He stopped everything, Doug, went back to his office and filed a brand new charge after the jury was picked, that our client forcibly injected cocaine into this woman, which, of course, you can't do that. But he did. And we lost at the trial level. But, of course, on appeal, it was thrown out. And the whole thing was thrown out on appeal. I don't know if the judge and the prosecutor went to high school together, but that judge never should have allowed a new charge to be filed after the jury was picked. That's so unethical. It stretches credibility.
Mm.
So I've won, you know, whenever I got a murder case, Doug, I'm always looking very intensely at the autopsy and the toxicology report both, because frequently, not all the time, but frequently it plays a role in the overall case, that we need to know what's in there. It's not optional, is it, Doug?
Not at all. No. And if you don't, Yeah, no, you must, because it does tell the tale. Now, some people will say, now, there was a second autopsy done by Dr. Michael Bodden, of course, the medical examiner to the stars. And his conclusions were different than the medical examiner's conclusions. Now, you and I know, and folks, if you're not familiar with the venue of murder and homicide and such, you can buy experts. Now, I'm not saying that Bodden or whatever was wrong, but when you look at something, you know, maybe with a slight bias because you're getting paid by the family or getting paid by a defense attorney or getting paid by, oh, I don't know, a prosecuting attorney, sometimes you could say the same thing with a little bit, maybe a little bit differently, and change the meaning of what you see and say. So there are somewhat dueling.
Well, Doug, I agree with you, and I've been dealing with expert witnesses for decades also. But there's two parts to what you're saying. One would be the opinion of the two pathologists. The other would be the hard science. Now, opinions can differ, and reasonable men can differ and reach different conclusions. That's certainly they can. What doesn't change, however, is the hard science. The blood draw and what was in the man's blood doesn't change from one toxicologist one forensic pathologist to another. And I'm sure both men were forensic pathologists because that's typically who does this kind of work. And hopefully the jury will be able to tell the difference between opinion and hard science. And the defense, in my opinion, should point out the difference between opinion and hard science. And that doesn't change from one forensic pathologist to another, does it, Doug?
Well, no. But I guess what I'm saying, when you look at, for example, now in the case of George Floyd, you look at the Emmy's report, okay, the Hennepin County Medical Examiner's report. You'll notice, I think, folks, you'll notice at the beginning, I believe it's at the beginning, page one, let me see, where's it, page two? You'll see that he tested positive for the coronavirus. All right, okay, it's number four on page two. Viral testing, Minnesota Department of Health, postmortem nasal swab collected, 5/26/20, positive for 2019. Novel coronavirus RNA by PCR. See comments below. So, okay, now take that for example. Just take that momentarily and put yourself in the prosecution or defense. It doesn't really matter, I suppose. And take that fact and argue that, saying, well, look, the guy had coronavirus, so we know it's a respiratory illness. And maybe, just maybe, that contributed to his inability to breathe. To hell with the, 11 nanograms per milliliter of fentanyl, which would cause the same thing. No, it's the positive coronavirus. Medical examiner A, medical examiner B saying, oh, no, that was a PCR test, and that's, still in question. So there's no evidence to show that the coronavirus had any respiratory impact on his death. Now that's getting way into the weeds, but you see what I'm saying, right? It's a fact, but it's, I guess it's the same thing you said to some degree. But how do you apply that fact to this case? In this case, just saying. That makes sense.
It does make sense.
All right.
It does make sense. Now I think. Throwing the COVID test in there is a distraction. It serves no purpose for either the defense or the prosecutor, in my opinion. It's just a side issue, a distraction compared to the matter at hand, which is what caused this man to die. I would hope and believe that neither side would attempt to make any use of that. They might. You never know what they're going to do.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. I got minorly distracted over here. No, you're exactly right. And the external examination there as well, it's pretty typical of an Emmy report. But I know, for people who haven't seen it, I'll put it up at, or maybe it is up, I'm not sure, at HagmanReport.com. But anyway, so there it is. So I guess the bigger picture, though, here, bringing up this trial, what do you see happen? I mean, obviously it's going to be violence, but how's this going to play out?
Well, I'll tell you what's already going on. I listen to National Public Radio for opposition research, Doug.
Yeah.
And, well, I do.
Yeah. I know. I do too.
I can't stomach it for very long at a time, but, for a year now, it's been nonstop reporting on the make-believe pandemic. Reporting 500,000 people dead. And when it comes to George Floyd, they just outright say, Officer Chauvin who killed George Floyd. They state that as fact, not as a man who's charged with murdering George Floyd, but as a matter of fact that he did murder George Floyd. That's the reporting of National Public Radio. Now, I have to admit, I've not monitored ABC, CBS, CNN as to how they're addressing it. I have an opinion of what they're doing, but most likely these major networks are characterizing Officer Chauvin as a murderer. That's my belief, and I, like I said, I've not monitored those networks to see what they're doing.
And
stirring the pot. But what they're doing, Doug.
Yeah, and look at the gold coffin, the gold casket, the numerous services, if you will, the shameless display, the I can't breathe remarks and the mantra. But Al Sharpton, Jesse, you know, all the usual suspects coming in and making George Floyd this pseudo victim, I suppose, of all the things that are wrong with the police. Now, so this is, I guess people really need, in my opinion, people really need to understand that what is behind this is going to give us what will become of this. So the very people who set this up, the parading of the coffin, the flowers, the vigils, the mantras, the and so on, the Black Lives Matter people, the ACAB, you know, all cops are, you get the idea. I mean, these are Marxist Maoist tactics, every single one of them, that are being foisted upon the American public and the American psyche. And you know, I saw a video, and I'm just going to toss this out there in this conversation. You take 100% of the population, and I don't know how many people have ever gone to Las Vegas and sat in an audience and been selected or not selected for a hypnotic act, if you know what I'm talking about. Sometimes they get pretty racy. But, you know, hypnotists are saying, okay, well, I'm going to hypnotize the willing participants, you know, and they'll select, and some they won't select. I went to two. So I never got selected because for reasons obvious, but there's 20% of the population who are suggestible, 20% who are absolutely unsuggestible. And then there's the larger amount, 60%, who can go either way and can be convinced of things. The reason I bring this up is because what I see taking place with respect to Floyd and BLM and Antifa and all of these things all around is this crazy psychological push for servitude, and it's population control. It's to control a population as opposed to population control, but to control a population. It does require some measure of consent, and those 20% who are suggestible, and many of the 60% who fall in the middle are in fact suggestible to the things that you heard on NPR and that's being broadcast on CBS, NBC, ABC, MSNBC, and so on. So that's, you know, so that's the bigger picture of things, I believe.
I agree, Doug. I agree. This is far more sophisticated than we saw, you know, during the trial in Los Angeles that led to the LA riots back in the 80s. We had a local TV radio station that was broadcasting very inflammatory material. You know, back then the internet was just in laboratories. There was no social media as we understand it now. TV coverage was very restricted in terms of anything inflammatory. That's all changed. We now have instant communications that didn't exist back in the 80s. The ability to inflame passion in ways that didn't exist back then. And Doug, they're making use of all those platforms right now to inflame passion nationwide. I believe, based on what I learned almost a year ago, that when this trial is over, there will be, that night, there will be incidents in 38 major cities across the country. You know, cities of 500,000 more, cities that have Democratic mayors, and the worst ones will be the cities with Democratic mayors that have Democratic governors. They will be the worst because there won't be anybody to call out the National Guard.
That's true.
It's off to the races. This morning on my show, we were just advising people just to be gone. If you can't relocate out of the city, and it may be a good day to go on a good time to go on vacation. What some families do, and of course, I was reporting. I had live reports from the Ferguson riots every day, both sets of Ferguson riots. I'm a native St. Louis, and I had a number of friends who their homes were in St. Louis, or they had wives and children. What the men did was evacuate the children, while the men stayed behind to protect the largest family financial asset they had, which was a family home.
Mm-hmm.
I expect that could be happening again if these riots start up following the trial being over for Officer Chauvin. We're business, you know, and we need to remind people also, Doug, that almost no insurance policy will pay off for a claim due to civil disorder. I've been told there may be one or two out there, but the best of my knowledge,
check your
insurance
policies,
companies
folks.
Don't pay off a claim due to civil disorder or war, as far as that goes. When I went back in the reserves, the Army Reserve, Doug, I searched until I found a insurance company that would pay for my death if I died in war. I did find one to give my wife some peace of mind.
Beyond the military benefits, plural, beyond that, right? Is what you're saying?
Yeah, it's private sector. Right. Private sector insurance. All right. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Just to be clear, because people say, "Well, you could." Yeah. No, we understand that. Okay.
There is what they call soldiers group life insurance, which of course everybody has that. But I wanted life insurance above and beyond that little bit of money for my wife to take care of her if I did expire in a war someplace. Ladies and gentlemen, if you know somebody who has a home or a business in a city of 50,000, 500,000 or more that has a Democratic mayor, you need to advise them the following, that if their house is damaged or destroyed or their business is damaged or destroyed from riots, there's not going to be a check coming in the mail. That's not going to happen. Now, the Korean businessmen during the L.A. riots, they were on the roof with weapons, and they defended their property, which frequently was also their home. So a lot of those businesses, Doug, they had a ground floor business and a second floor apartment for themselves and their families. If they would lose that, they would lose everything. And that's why they fought with everything they had to protect their homes and protect their businesses. And I fully expect to see the same thing happening again, Doug, just like we did in Ferguson.
Yep.
My Monday guest, Sam Andrews, he was the field commander of the Oath Keepers at Ferguson. They were when they first got to town, many of the black business owners, they thought, oh, no, the Ku Klux Klan has arrived. And then 2 days later, you see the smiling black business owners with their arms wrapped around the Oath Keepers who were protecting their property. The police weren't protecting their property, but the Oath Keepers were. And all the property protected by the Oath Keepers, no harm came to them, either property damage or a loss of life, either one. And that was a good outcome, despite the fact that the FBI get this, Doug. The FBI sent snipers in the buildings across from the Oath Keepers protected buildings with their precision rifles, preparing to shoot the Oath Keepers until Sam Andrews called them out and pointed out to the police what was going on, and the police basically ran them off because they were meant to cause problems, not to solve problems.
Yeah, and we're going to see, and even more so today. Now, I think that was, what year was that that you're referencing?
Oh, my.
Was that back in, was that pre-01 or was that post-01?
Oh, it's more recent than that. It's about 8 years ago.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay, so think of the woke, and I use that term deliberately disparagingly, the woke police departments, the woke, all the woke departments, the woke governments, consider what we're dealing with. Not only aren't there going to be people, meaning the police, that are going to come and help you, especially in blue cities and blue states, but they're going to come to make sure you don't fight back, in my view. That's what I see taking place.
Well, Doug, after what happened in New Orleans following Hurricane Katrina, laws were passed all over the country that prevented authorities from taking civilians' guns. So it depends on what jurisdiction you live in. The Ferguson riots began August 2014, 7 years ago this coming August. The officer who shot the individual, he frequented a gun store that I also frequented, and one of the local TV stations showed a video of the officer's home the same night that home was trashed out and basically wiped, you know, damaged and not quite destroyed by, criminals, basically. A repeat of, imagine the LA riots and the Ferguson riots happening in 38 major cities all at the same time. I think that's what we're looking at, Doug. I really do.
And
by the way, Michael Brown, the guy who was shot to death, he was a thug. He was a suspect in a homicide where a store clerk was murdered with a hammer in a hardware store.
Yeah.
He was a suspect in that case. The video was released later on of Michael Brown stealing those little cigars that people smoke. And basically shoving the store clerk, a slightly built Asian gentleman, just shoving him to the side when the Asian man tried to intervene from the shoplifting. Michael Brown looked like he could be a professional football linebacker. I mean, a big, strong guy, tough guy, a thug is what he was.
Right.
And the officer that shot him at was within his rights. Officer Darren Wilson. He's living under a new name in an undisclosed location, and started his life over after having it wrecked by doing the right thing for the right reasons. Working as a St. Louis County police officer. St. Louis County police, by the way, is now all eaten up with being politically correct. St. Louis County Police Department now has an officer whose job is to recruit new officers who have the mental illness of homosexuality and related mental disorders. It's pretty amazing what's happened to the St. Louis County Police Department, Doug.
Well, yeah. And okay, so to that, to what you mentioned there, last week we saw a Muslim or a follower of the Nation of Islam take his vehicle and crash it into the barriers at the Capitol, get out, and ultimately he killed a Capitol police officer. Now, folks, okay, that's what happened. Nation of Islam follower, a black male living in the United States who had scheduled, interestingly enough, was scheduled to have his name changed to something Muhammad. He got out of the vehicle, and was shot dead by the another Capitol police officer. Now, my statement here goes back to the Capitol police officer that died the day after or 2 days after the Capitol riot, the incident at the Capitol on the 6th. That police officer lied in state, right, in the Capitol. The narrative, and I guess, John, what I'm saying is I want everyone to really think about this. That man who, there's no evidence that he died as a direct result of the activities on the 6th of January, was given one of the most prestigious funerals of any Capitol police officer ever. Hold that thought. The guy, the follower of the Nation of Islam, who killed one Capitol police officer and wounded the other severely, had a machete. Is that Capitol police officer going to be given the same, is he going to lie in state in the Capitol? Is he going to be given the same honor as the one from the 6th of, so allegedly from the 6th of January?
I doubt it. I doubt it.
You're right.
Within the last few days, the president ordered all the flags nationwide to be flown at half-mast to honor those who died on the 6th day of February.
January.
It was January, excuse me. Yes, 6th day of January. the week before, now it's been about 3 weeks ago, president ordered all the flags flown at half-staff for the make-believe 500,000 people that died from COVID-19.
Right.
I was talking to somebody over the weekend, a blood relative I'm very close to. He really believes that more than 500,000 Americans died from COVID-19. Doug, that's the foundation for everything else. All the lockdowns, all the hundreds of businesses destroyed, people's lives destroyed, people committing suicide, is the belief that this is a deadly virus that's leading to death above and beyond the normal flu season. And it's all media driven, assisted by the government, of course, to have a make-believe pandemic that people do believe. It's so unnecessary and so wrong, Doug, that we're wrecking our country because of a make-believe pandemic.
Yes.
And we can't say this often enough. There is no pandemic. It's make-believe. It's made up. There is no pandemic. If we can just get that one message out and have people believe it, it would help a lot. Don't you think, Doug?
Well, even the CDC has came out, and this is in the fine print, I suppose, just so people understand the numbers that are being reported. It's only 6% of the reported numbers that can be attributed to, in a broad manner, to this specific COVID, SARS, novel COVID, novel coronavirus, Chinese Communist Party virus. So 6% of the numbers you're hearing would be more accurate than the numbers you're hearing. 6%. And this is admitted by the CDC.
Which is not much different. That'd be 30,000 people. 6% of 500,000 is 30,000.
Right.
Which is not that far off from a normal flu season. It really isn't.
Right. There'll be a little less, but the demographics kind of skew that a tad. But notice how, as well, when we talk about this, the number of the totality of deaths from 18 to 19, 19 to 20, and year to date have not risen to suggest a pandemic, a pandemic with that level of mortality. So, yeah, you're right.
What have we done to ourselves, Doug? What have we done to ourselves? The combination of fear and ignorance is a powerful thing. People are ignorant because they only know what's coming at them from the mainstream media. They're fearful because of what's coming at them from the mainstream media. I personally know people who literally have not been outside in 13 months. I've not stepped out into fresh air for 13 months, Doug. That's wow. My grandchildren have not set foot in a schoolroom for 13 months. They're supposed to be freshmen in high school. They've never seen the inside of a high school as a freshman. the twins, a boy and a girl.
That's sad. That's not right.
And the really young children know, Doug, if you're 5 years old, this is the only world you've ever known.
Right.
You've never known any other world. For you, this is normal. And how do you measure the adverse effects? I mean, Psychologists can certainly make attempts to do so, but how do you measure it? How do you know the long-term effects what we're doing to small children? And the younger, the worse it is, I think. Now, we've had teenagers commit suicide, but really young children don't know that suicide is even a possibility. And it's tragic. It's unnecessary. It's make-believe. This pandemic is make-believe, non-existent pandemic that I started to read an article this morning from my very respected college. And as soon as I read the author saying talking about the pandemic as something being real, I just put the article down and didn't read it anymore. I didn't get past the first paragraph because I know that everything else was tainted once I knew that the author believed the pandemic was real. Now, what's the point in continuing to read it, Doug? There is no point.
Well, here's my take on this. Chinese Communist Party virus, lab created. I believe that. I believe it exists. I believe that people have been infected, but I also believe the effects, including and especially the deaths, have been overstated. But I believe it's about as real as, you know, maybe the swine flu or the Hong Kong flu back in the late 60s, early 70s, you know, which we didn't hear really anything or that much about. Okay, so having said that, it has really nothing to, like you said, I mean, we don't have a pandemic, but we do have a pandemic because the definition was changed and altered to fit the current set of circumstances that were planned by the very people that Jones laid out back on Saturday. So that's,
Jones, you know, Jones has a lot of a bluster and showbiz to what he does.
Sure.
But I'll tell you, he hit a home run with this one, Doug.
Oh, he did.
He really hit a home run with this one.
And for those, you know what, if Eric the Tech, if you don't mind, the SPARS document, and John, you can take a look as well, the people at home watching this, or wherever you might be watching this, the SPARS, SPARS document, is right here. It's coming up right here soon. As soon as Eric the Tech brings it up, there it is, right there. The SPARS pandemic. Now, again, this was created way before Event 201. This was created back 4 years ago. And this, and isn't it interesting, John? This is a futuristic scenario for public health. Okay, this is a drill. Now, the years that they identified was 2025 to 2028. Yeah, slide that back to 2019 or 2020 to 2023 or 2024, depending on what years, or 2022, depending on whatever year you might want to start that at. But, and if you scroll down, just real quick, if you scroll down, I'm not sure if I have the, if I can read that. There's the project team. You know, again, look at the, John, I mean, the people behind this, I would say that, I don't know. Same suspects or suspects with associated with the same associations, just a different day. And if you folks, you can go. Oh, and one of my favorite parts of this, if there is a favorite, and this is 77 pages long or 76 pages long. One of my favorite parts is they account for people like you, people like me, people like those who are listening. how to combat the information that we provide, the sensible information. How do we combat the people who are anti-experimental vaccine, genetic therapy kind of stuff? How do we handle social media? It's all in this document, and you're right. He hit a home run. So that's a good document to really just study. But it's
absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, this is more solid evidence that if you and I were in trial preparation, Doug, the kind of evidence that we'd be looking for as part of the defense effort.
Yeah.
It's powerful, powerful material, if there was a trial, that a jury would have to have this, this information put in front of them. The pre-planning of this, probably goes back, a decade or more.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Was it Roosevelt that said nothing of any major consequence in politics happens, on its own accord?
Yes.
Or is that effect? I'm paraphrasing, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is certainly a case, of that, where pre-planning went into this. We've got the public statements by Fauci before President Trump even took office that he would be facing a major pandemic. How can you know that unless it was planned in advance? How could you?
And what he's saying today, John, as well, about the mutations, the different viruses, the fact that more shots, more jabs are going to be needed. We're going to have to wear masks and limit travel, you know, for the foreseeable future. I mean, everything that's being stated by this garden gnome, highest paid garden gnome in the federal government, is to me, that's insight into what they're planning, I believe. I mean, that's insight into what they're planning. Oh, and the other part of that SPARS document that follows right along with what we're seeing, the timeline, adverse effects of the long-term side effects of the what they call this is a CoroVax vaccine emerged. And how to handle those, how to handle, how to downplay that, to respond to the public demand for compensation for side effect compensation for effects. And so on and on and on. I mean, this is a great find, but to me, disturbing as well, and especially disturbing.
The whole thing is disturbing, Doug. Hmm. The entire thing is disturbing. Watching our country, our culture, our economy, our youngsters, all harmed because of the intentional actions of a small group of criminals, and they are criminals.
Yeah,
this is a major criminal conspiracy that's affecting the entire planet, Doug.
Well,
a friend of mine, his mother, he escaped the Czech Republic more than 30 years ago. His mother still lives there, and he has some siblings there. You want to travel from one town in the Czech Republic to another, you have to have special written permission to get past the checkpoints. So it's happening all over the world, not just the United States. I doubt we'll see checkpoints here running at Malif. Well, actually, you may see them in California, New York, Washington, Oregon. That's certainly a possibility. It could go that direction very easily, Doug. In these blue states that have blue governors, it very easily could go that direction. And, of course, it'll be supported by the federal government as well.
I agree with you on that. I'm losing my earpiece. Go ahead. Sorry,
okay.
I lost my earpiece.
Okay, I got a UPS truck in the driveway.
Okay, all right, now I got it back.
I don't think he needs me right now. He's got a major delivery. I'm getting on my porch.
You get pallets of good stuff. If you need to take care of that, I'll
go. Why don't I go out and say hi to him real quick, and I'll be right back.
Best too. All right, okay. All right. Just yell when you're back. All right, folks. By the way, this is a good time to mention. You're listening to the Hagmann Report right here on the Global Star Radio Network. HagmanReport.com. That's HagmanReport.com, where you can go to find all of your information needs, program information. Click on the banner on the top. It takes you right to our show page. And that's HagmanReport.com. That's number one. Have an announcement, number two. Stan Dale won't be with us tomorrow again. He's not feeling
okay,
well.
Okay, I'm back.
All right. I just want to finish my announcement here, and then I'll get back to you. Stan Dale will be absent from tomorrow's program. He's still not feeling all that great, folks. Please keep me in your prayers. Again, nothing serious, nothing life-threatening, that is. And but keep me in your prayers because, you know, and send him well wishes, stan@standale.com. And no worries on that. Thirdly, very quickly, folks, I'm going to have an exclusive to Wisconsin Christian News. This newspaper, it's in today, okay? And it has to do with the Hunter Biden laptop information. No other publication is going to have this except the subscriber. Well, no other publication is going to have this. So here's what you need to do, folks. Subscribe to Wisconsin Christian News, but just don't subscribe to the hard copy and digital. Subscribe or donate as well, because really the cost of subscription barely maintains this publication. And you want truth? In today's world, you need this. This is the paper, Wisconsin Christian News. It's not just for Wisconsin. It's for the world. Okay? And I'm telling you right now, they need money. They need money to carry on. WisconsinChristianNews.com. That's WisconsinChristianNews.com. Sign up, subscribe, but donate as well. WisconsinChristianNews.com. My guest is, of course, John Moore, TheLibertyMan.com. Every Monday, tremendous guest. Taking care of business with UPS deliveries. Got it. Good. Anything fun like, SAM missiles or, any heavy duty arms?
People that monitor you and me do not, have any sense of humor.
I know
so
that.
I'm not gonna, these are very humorless individuals.
But you know what? I don't care. You know, John, I love you, brother, but I'll tell you what, I don't care. Because here's the thing. Now, this is just me. So, to the feds listening to this, me talking, not John Moore. It's me talking, okay? Number one, you're looking in the wrong places, okay? You couldn't find your back end with both hands, okay? You couldn't investigate your way out of a wet paper bag. Well, you could, I suppose, if you had the charge from your superiors, but you don't. But you're too gutless. That's right, gutless, I'm calling you. Okay, to stand up and say, wait a minute, what we're doing here is wrong. The order's coming from the seventh floor of the Department of State and elsewhere. They're immoral. They're unconstitutional. Why don't you take a look at Hunter Biden's laptop? Hey, I've got copies. They're not here, but I've got them. Why don't you take a look there for the criminality from child porn to international criminality by the Biden crime family. So it's the lack of sense of humor. I'm over it. And which brings me to another issue. I want to ask you, because you mentioned this earlier. You said about the coronavirus passports, the COVID passports, the vax passes, or whatever it is. You said, you know, yeah, or you're talking about shots, nurses faking shots with one another. I get that.
Right.
Flu vaccines.
Right.
Okay. Here's my question to you, John. At what point, and this is to you, but at what point do you say, you know what? I ain't faking this crap anymore. I'm not faking a COVID pass, a vax pass. I'm not faking a shot. I'm not wearing a cutesy mask. I'm not, you know, that has a message on it, you know, like I ain't doing that anymore. I am resisting and I'm going to shove it right up your, you know, and saying, you want to fight? I read on forums. Oh, it's a shame. I lost all my guns in the boating accident. You think that's going to fly when they're beating down your door? Okay. You really think that's going to fly? I lost all my guns in the boating accident. Tragic. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. While they're ripping your house apart and tearing your walls down.
Right.
It ain't going to fly. So at what point do we say to you, Notice I didn't do anything. You know, at what point do we say, no, I have the Constitution on my side. I'm not getting it. I'm not getting jabbed. I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to walk around with a stupid, card that's, counterfeit card. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to fight back and say, you. Why aren't we doing that? Why aren't we acting like that pastor up there in Calgary saying, get out of here, you Nazis, you Gestapo people? And if everyone did that, we might win.
Well, Doug, it may come down to that. There's in these blue states, California, Oregon, Washington State, New York, there is lots of patriots that still live there, conservative Christian patriots. They're on the front lines. There's no doubt they're on the front lines. And I can see, well, let's see if they, let's say, for example, they do set up checkpoints on the highways. Matt Bracken.
Speed bumps.
I love Matt Bracken's work, but you've had Matt on your show, haven't you, I think?
Yes.
Matt Bracken?
Yes, yes.
I thought so. In one of his scenarios, there was a checkpoint. They're looking for terrorists, and it gets out of hand. A completely innocent man is being dragged out of a car by a uniformed officer. Two cars back is a Navy SEAL who's home on leave, who basically takes out the cop who was harming the innocent citizen. And that basically starts a war right there at that checkpoint. It's very realistic, the scenario that Matt Bracken wrote about there. Very realistic. I can see that happening. I can see myself getting involved in something like that. If I see some authority harming an innocent person, I would not want to do that, but if I had to, I would. So there's lots of possible scenarios. We don't know, at least I don't know the answers, Doug, as to what's going to be happening in the future. These vaccine passports are already in effect in Europe. There's already airlines. There's more than 100 airlines in the world, and there's already airlines mandating proof of vaccination to get on the plane. The cruise industry, I get a newsletter from the travel and cruise industry, which includes news about resorts, cruises, and airlines. And the cruise ships will be mandating proof of vaccination to get on a cruise ship, except for children who will have to take a COVID test on the spot. So we're already at the beginning points of it. It hasn't affected all of our citizens yet, but I can easily see it going that direction, Doug. And with this president, it will be accelerated going that direction to have proof of vaccination to engage in normal activities, which may include shopping at some point. It could get that bad, Doug. And how do you resist? You know, what are you going to do? They have some 18-year-old girl at the grocery store saying you can't come in. She's not going to try to block your way. So you force your way past her, and they just won't check you out. We saw this happen. There was a video.
Yeah.
I think six people went into a Trader Joe's.
Yep. Yep.
With no mask, and it caused chaos in the store. And the protesters were picking up bananas and leaving cash on the counter and walking out with the bananas just to make a point because nobody would even check them out.
And they were still getting, I mean, and you had these Nazis, and you saw it, John, and folks, we played that video on this channel. It was a couple of weeks ago. In fact, that one guy from Trader Joe's grabbed the potato chips out of somebody's hands and threw them. They were paid for. But you have these Nazis standing in the way. You know, they're imbued with power, with this sense of power. And so, you know, you're right, okay? You're correct. So one of two things or both are going to happen. You're going to have bloodshed on aisle six, clean up on aisle six. You know, there's a lot of blood there. We need to clean that up. That's going to happen. And then I also think you're going to have communities gather together and have their own, I don't want to say black market, but their own market sphere, I think, You know, hey, I don't require a mask, passport, whatever. You know, I've got bananas, I've got tomatoes, I've got, you know, pizzas and wings, and come on down. Just bring your silver or your whatever method of exchange. But I think the government's going to go after those people. And then the fight is going to be taken on at that level. But you're at least going to have a community behind you there. You're not going to be solo. So that's kind of the way I see things playing out. But as far as the airlines and cruises, bankrupt them, in my view. Don't go on an airline. Well, I've got to go because I've got to work. Well, you know what? I love you, brother. Okay? I understand. But I got to tell you what. Works, you know, I will sacrifice everything, and I'll put my mouth where, I'll put my money and life where my mouth is, John. I will sacrifice everything I own right here and right now.
Well, Doug, I won't fly commercial unless it's a family emergency. I drive. Last week I drove to Austin, Texas and back. It was an 1800 mile trip, round trip. I've been driving, even before COVID, I would make the drive to see my family up in Washington State, 2,100 miles one way to Washington State and back. Well, here's what I was telling people over the weekend, and you've done the same thing. I was talking to folks. I said the following. I've been in city jails, county jails, state prisons, and federal prisons, and I get treated better going in and out with less issues than I do flying on a commercial airplane. And that's a true statement,
yeah,
Doug. And
I agree with you,
wouldn't you?
Yeah. Riker. Well, Attica. Riker's been to both. Okay. As a visitor. No, not to stay. But that's scary enough, by the way. I gotta tell you. I've actually, yes. In by comparison.
No, in all those facilities, I never had to take my shoes off.
I never
had to take my belt off or outer garments.
I had to do that. You know what? I had to take my belt off and my tie off and empty my pockets at a psychiatric hospital. The nurse that, this was back, oh my gosh, 1977, I think it was. Anyway, we're transporting a psychiatric patient to, from that hospital to a hospital a couple hundred miles away. And the nurse said, you walk in here, don't have anything on you or don't wear anything that you don't want to have shoved down your throat, shoved in any orifice or, be impaled with, because there's some bad people here. And that scared the living, you know, what out of me. Okay. And I got to tell you, that's when we had those scary, or that's when we had those psych wards. And, wow. The demon. I mean, that's all I'm going to say. But, you know, I don't want to get in the weeds, but you're right though, brother. You're right. You're right. And we could probably exchange stories too on this stuff. But yeah.
Oh, we could. People love our stories, but the point of this story is, you get treated better going into these lockdowns than flying on a commercial airliner. That's the point of this. Now, they're mandating you wear a mask on these airplanes too, and there have been some horrible incidents of people involving these masks on these airplanes, just absolutely horrible. I'm not going to put myself through that. I'll drive, thank you very much, and enjoy the drive, and then keep their damn airplanes as far as I'm concerned.
But what happens, okay, and I think there's an element of the population that love their servitude, that accept and even embrace their servitude, okay, for whatever reason. I think it's a lot of mental illness, and I think it's a lot of conditioning. Now, but what happens, John, at the point where you are cornered? Yeah, you can't drive a car. You can, but you can't get gas because you need to show your almighty COVID pass or vax pass or whatever it might be. or you can't go into the store, or you can't do the, you know, what happens at that point? You know, you've got a choice.
Well, here's what happens. I retain the services of one of my retired neighbors who could use a little extra income to help me achieve those things because they already got the COVID pass.
Okay.
Now, they make, my neighbor, my friend makes a little extra money. It might be, or maybe a widow, there's a local widow that, the widow of one of my very good friends, she could use a little, she'll probably get the COVID pass and she could use a little extra income and I could spend a couple of hours, talking to the widow of my friend, an enjoyable conversation. She gets a little extra money. I get what I need and everybody's happy.
All right. Now, with all due respect, okay, with all due respect, isn't that the chicken way out? In other words, I understand that. I totally understand what you're doing.
Well, Doug, you've worked undercover, and so have I.
Yeah, yeah.
I just look at it as another assignment. You know, when we work undercover, we pretend to be somebody that we're not.
But what about after you're dead and your daughter, your son, your grandchildren?
Well, I'll be working behind the scenes at the same time. That's what we Green Berets do.
Okay. All right. I can accept
We work behind the scenes to disrupt and destroy the enemy. Okay. Behind the scenes, quietly and covertly.
And the only reason I ask that is because a lot of people will say, well, isn't that the easy way out? Isn't that the coward's way out? And I understand their question. And I understand their point. And I agree because but we've kind of painted ourselves into this corner that we're in right now. New York State, what's wrong with you people allowing this Excelsior Pass program to go into effect? You can't go to a ball game without showing this. Well, you know, okay, so the answer would be screw that. I'm not going to go. Or I'll just have a forged one, you know, and then you got the feds on your butt. But anyway, to me, the latter would be an affront to the Patriots saying, no, I'm going to fight you. And that's what I think a lot of people might
do. You pick your battles, Doug. Yeah, to fight back, you have to have food, you have to have shelter, you have to have fuel for your vehicle. So you do what you got to do to be able to be an undercover operative and fight back. Now that's my plan.
Okay, So what you're saying? Okay, so just to be clear, what you're saying is, So I'll use my neighbor, but concurrent with that, I'm going to be working behind the scenes to.
Absolutely.
Okay. Okay with that. Okay.
You can't be effective if you don't have food and fuel, shelter, and so forth. You'll become ineffective. So, and that's guerrilla warfare 1-on-1 is to make sure the guerrillas have what they need. And, if whatever it takes for the guerrillas to have what they need, that's what they do.
Okay. All right. And I find it interesting, too, in this same vein of conversation, that the number one use, now this is an unscientific poll, but the number one use for the stimulus checks has been to buy AR-15s and the AR-15 variants. You got the Washington Examiner reporting that.
Guilty.
Yeah, his armory is bigger than mine, right? But the Washington Examiner is reporting for the second time in 3 months, the FBI, broke its record for gun sales. The NICS, checks.
The background checks, right?
Background, yeah, yeah. And for concealed carry permits as well as other firearm background checks in March. So this is, so what we're seeing today right now is, people are arming up. For the first quarter of 2021 as a whole, to date, for the first quarter of 2021 as a whole, I guess this is a fiscal year, about 5.9 million firearms were sold as opposed to 5.2 million in the first quarter of 2020. So, we're outpacing tremendous numbers here. last year record sales of 22.8 million would be broken based on the far broken much earlier based on today's numbers. So there you have it. Just saying.
Well, Doug, I hope people will understand the principles of guerrilla warfare, because we may be headed to that where people need to appear to be living a normal, lawful life while at the same time engaging in activities that will cause harm to the powers that be. I'm not advocating that people commit crimes, but I am advocating that people do things that will slow down the powers that be, disrupt the powers that be, will cause confusion among the powers that be, none of which has to involve any criminal activity or use of weapons or explosives, but all of which can be done by people who just want to do something.
It's more fun if they did. No, that's a joke, folks, okay? In poor taste, I get it. However, I don't see things changing. For example, you were heavily involved in the riots, Rodney King riots and stuff. Things changed when you had Koreans and others on rooftops heavily armed. Things changed, at least for them, for the properties they were protecting and the people they were protecting. Here's what I see happening. This is just me. And this is, I'm not advocating this either, but I've told you this before. I can see where a Portland-like situation or Seattle or somewhere in the Pacific Northwest coming maybe to the heartland, maybe even Kenosha. Maybe it might be in Kenosha. Kyle Rittenhouse, for example. I can see a bunch of Kyle Rittenhouses. I can see, a bunch of Antifa / BLM people going down the street, smashing windows, and no one hears a thing. One drops, another drops, and another drops. And pretty soon they're looking around saying, well, what's going on? And then that person's head just turns blood red, brain matter on the bricks, on the glass. Where'd that come from? Nothing, And then all of a sudden people scatter. And that's day one. Day two. Night two. All of a sudden there's less, but there's a bigger body count. I can see that taking place. And you know what? In my view, if the police get in the way to protect Antifa or BLM, they're on the wrong side, and I can see them going down too. And I'm not advocating this. I can just see this happening.
Well, it sounds like you're reading from a Matt Bracken novel there, Doug, quite frankly, which is fine. Nothing wrong with that. Matt's an excellent writer, and he writes very realistic stories that may become reality.
Actually, I was thinking of Death Wish 1, 2, 3, and 4. Okay.
From the 70s. The architect whose family was murdered didn't use a precision rifle with a suppressor on it. It was usually a pistol at point blank range.
Yeah,
but I understand the concept.
But New York City, I can see a Paul Kersey event taking place in New York City with what we're seeing in the rise in crime. Washington DC, rise in carjackings. And the idiotic mayor coming out and saying, well, I've got some car jacking safety tips for you. Yeah, bite me, okay? No. We're not going to do that.
I understand that in the movie theaters in the 70s when they were playing those films, that there were standing ovations in the movie theaters.
Well, yeah, because it was – they were living this – that was New York back in the 70s. Right. I was there.
Right. I've been going to movie theaters for basically more than 60 years, and I've seen it happen at Red Dawn, for example, people applauding during the movie. It's a rare thing to have a live audience in a movie theater applaud anything in a movie, but it does occasionally happen. And those films did get that kind of applause and response in New York City.
Yeah, and sadly, now it's a rare thing to have a live audience in the movie theater in any blue state or in blue city, but I digress. Yeah. Did you get the joke?
I got the joke.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So we've got about 6 minutes left of the program. I kind of dominated the topics. What else do we need to talk about here? Because, real quick, the reports that Joe Biden was taken to the hospital, there was a 7-second, I think, video clip yesterday posted. That's kind of debunked. I want to say kind of debunked, or that's, I don't know whether you caught any of that, but,
I didn't catch it. No.
Yeah. I don't see any, after doing some research and making some inquiries, supposedly Joe Biden went to the hospital, but I don't believe that to be the case. So, okay. Go ahead, sir. Yeah. Take it.
We need to advise people that prayer is powerful. You can't be unvaccinated once you've been vaccinated. The only thing that can help you, quite frankly, is the power of God. We can encourage people to not accept the vaccination. You know, we encourage people to get ready for the consequences of the Officer Chauvin trial. When it's over, the riots begin. I'm absolutely convinced of that. I hope I'm wrong. But we started hearing a year ago, Doug, it's been 10, 11 months ago, that there will be riots in 38 cities. That hasn't changed. If anything, it's more real now than it was a year ago. Alexander Soros has been recruiting, training, equipping, and paying for rioters all over this country that are patiently waiting for the order to move forward with the riots. I believe the order will be given the evening of the trial ending for Officer Chauvin. That's my belief. I hope I'm wrong. People getting ready in advance, having a way to escape the city, getting out of the city beforehand, would be wise. It would be very wise, depending on what city you live in or near. This time, they'll be going for broke. This would be make it or break it time for the Alexander Soros rioters. They want to shut down the country, cause chaos, eventually get us softened up for an invasion by the Communist Chinese. I certainly understand and believe that also. We had news on Steve Quayle's website, by the way, in case you missed it. Venezuela has missiles from Iran in Venezuela that have, quote-unquote, interesting warheads on it, which tells me they may be EMP devices. I don't know, but they can shoot those things straight up in the air and knock out the southern part of the country real easy and never leave the airspace of Venezuela. There would be no warning, basically. So we have lots of issues and lots of things for people to prepare for and deal with, and they need to be doing it right now, not later, Doug. What do you think?
Yeah, yes. And to those people, and to the widows and the people who are alone, you know, and here's my soft spot. I look at women, children, the elderly, the impaired, people who have no friends, and they're living in right in the dead center of a city. Okay. Like you said, you know, you need to kind of think about getting out of there, but I look at them and they have no money. They've got no means. They're barely, you know, they're barely able to support themselves with what they're getting through no fault of their own. Maybe it was an injury. Maybe, you know, who knows what the circumstances are. My heart hurts for them. They're in my prayers all the time. When moving is out of the question, prayer and fight is essential in my view. But here's what I would recommend to every listener and viewer of this program. If you know of somebody like that, adopt them. And I say adopt them for this cause. Help them for this cause. And if you don't know anyone like that, there are plenty of them out there. You can find them. But go out of your comfort zone and say, look, you know, now if they don't want your help, fine. Or if they're one of these woke people, hey, you can't come in without a mask. Well, okay. You know where you're at.
Right.
Okay. But find them and help them. Offer to help them. Take them under your wing, so to speak, of protection. Pray with them together. Pray together with them, if I said that correctly. Pray for them, but also be there for them in the event that they need protection. Because there's nothing worse than hearing, and John, I'm sure you've been there, there's nothing worse than hearing the screams of someone who is being, you know, tortured.
Attacked. I understand. Attacked.
Yeah.
Well, Doug, thank you. We'll be back next Monday and do this all over again.
Indeed we will, my friend. John Moore, thelibertyman.com. Go to his website, bookmark his website. Make sure you check out all of the stuff on his website, products, everything, and listen to him every day. God bless you, my friend. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Doug. All right. See you next Monday.
Good night, everyone. Again, Stan Dale will not be with me tomorrow. May God bless each and every one of you. Have a good night.